League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the lecturing Luke Cutfer.
It is me.
This week we're talking
about... This week we're talking about egoic identities and stressful strifes.
But first, we have a Spotify update.
Ooh, how many subscribers do we have?
We have got 47,480 subscribers, but the very cool thing is that we hit 100,000 listeners on Spotify.
That is magical. And we're so close to 50,000 subscribers.
Yes.
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 Indeed. I can do maths.
I'm glad one of us can. So, Luke, what are you talking about?
Well, before I start, I have a question for those watching on the YouTube channel. And if not, then get to the YouTube channel from Spotify or podcast world that you're in and answer this question in the comments. How is your inner child feeling today?
Want Legos. That was the first thing to come to mind. He wants Legos.
That's wholesome. Okay, so today we are talking about transactional analysis.
Should we get Noah in?
Why? What, for some therapy?
Transactional analysis.
Oh, I see. Okay. I don't know how to respond to that, Gary. Moving on. Transactional analysis is a concept developed by Canadian-born psychiatrist Eric Byrne in the late 1950s. He published a book called Games People Play, The Psychology of Human Relationships in 1964.
Sorry. I heard that. It's like Eat, Pray, Love. Like, games, people, play.
Games. This is a book about some games, some people, and some ways of playing. With Lego, for example, if you are Corey's inner child.
No, because he wants Lego. He's
Okay. Well, okay, so it's a book called Games People Play. Full sentence, no commas. The Psychology of Human Relationships, which was published in 1964, which is very influential in the psychology field. Now, what I'm going to talk about today is by no means going to be a full or perfect representation of transactional analysis. You should also always speak to a trained therapist if you want to apply any of these things to your life. But that being said, this is something that I talk about a fair amount on the podcast. I sort of find ways of bringing it up because I find it so fascinating.
Yeah, all the time. All the time. This is the long-awaited episode. You've been saying this for months.
Yes, I've been teasing. Well, for a while, I thought Corey would do it. And then I thought, well, I'll give it a shot because I am very interested in it. But
I couldn't be bothered. I wanted a break.
That's
fine. I love this. I can just interrupt. I'm free.
Is this what it's like being you? You're trying to make a point, but this thing just keeps on blabbing stuff. Okay, so Corey,
yeah.
I have mentioned transactional analysis a fair amount on the podcast before, sort of vaguely, sort of alluding to it, sort of applying it. Can you give me anything you might have gleaned from those brief mentionings about what you think transactional analysis might be?
It's based on Freud saying, id, ego, superego, there is a parent and a child and another person, and they're all living inside of you, and they're happy and or sad.
Okay, well, interesting. Let me just double check, because I didn't say it was based on Freud. Did you check that? Have you done your own research? Okay.
No.
I'll just check that, because I don't think it is based on Freud. But what I was saying was it's sort of applicable.
Well, I'm sorry, Luke. I'm sorry for not being correct. I'm sorry for not having all the research in front of me. I'm sorry that you're not as good a teacher as I am.
Okay, well, interestingly, I was actually meaning that to be off podcast, but I just checked. It was indeed influenced by Freud.
I'm a genius.
Okay, so well done. Without even doing any research, you made a fantastic point before I'd even made a point. So well done. But yes, so the actual definition of transactional analysis is a system of popular psychology based on the idea that one's behavior and social relationships reflect an interchange between a parent, an adult, and a childlike aspect of your personality, which is established in early life. So we'll go into what that means. But that's from the Oxford Languages. One part that struck me as interesting about that is that it says it's a system of popular psychology. Now, Corey, what do you think people would... Yeah, you're doing a face at me. What do you think people would mean generally by popular psychology?
Well, it tends to start with a B and end with an oh shit.
Ah.
Yeah, but popular psychology is... the way I would view it is things that aren't strictly psychology, as in not the stuff that the scientists are actually working on that has a lot of empirical evidence. The kind of stuff you find in books by people who don't have a psychology degree that are pretending to be science books when actually they're just self-help books dressed up.
Yes. Okay. Interesting that you touched on self-help books here. So I looked on the Wikipedia page for pop psychology, right? And it says, pop psychology refers to concepts and theories about human and mental life and behavior that are supposedly based on psychology and are considered credible-ish and accepted by wider populations of people, not necessarily scientists. It goes on to list types of popular...
Is that psychology that isn't accepted?
Well, it goes on to list pop psychology examples as, like you said, self-help books, advice, which I just thought... That's so funny and broad. Just advice. I reckon you should do this. Oh, thank you for the pop psychology. Myths, such as people only use 10% of our brain, which I think would fall into the category you said of beginning with B and ending with all shit.
Yeah, horrible. There's some good movies that have come out of it, like Lucy, but... Annoying. I don't like that myth.
And interestingly, it also listed things like terminology such as inner child, which sort of is inside a transactional analysis. Left brain, right brain, which is like, for example, in the Bo Burnham song, right?
Yeah.
Not in like mainstream psychology, but in the Bo Burnham song. A Freudian slip, an Enneagram, that sort of thing. And I personally think this does a bit of a disservice to transactional analysis. It is like something that someone like me, who's not a psychologist, finds very interesting. But that's from it being applied in actual therapy sessions and being a little bit more accepted from an evidential status than something like a self-help book necessarily, or advice, or a myth like you use 10% of your brain.
I mean, I think the way that I would look at it is that I think we've mentioned this in another episode recently as well, is that you don't need to have evidence necessarily if something is helpful.
Sure.
In the witchcraft episode that we did, we kind of came to the conclusion that, look, there are things that people do in witchcraft and they say it's magic and that helps them. If we look at it from a science perspective, we could see maybe there's an optimism bias, or there is some other things going on there that's causing an internal sort of feeling of things being a different way, despite actually not changing reality. So it's useful to them, and that's fine. So if pop psychology is useful to you and you're not using it to harm anyone else or be sort of prescriptive or whatever, if you're using it in a descriptive sense, go for it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. As I guess what you're getting at to a certain extent there is that these are models, right? If the model of imagining there's a big person in the sky who'll punish you if you do bad things makes you behave better, then it actually does have real world effects and it actually is helpful. It doesn't mean it's objectively true. And we're going to get into this to a certain extent here where, like I said, there's this adult, child and parent states in transactional analysis that are supposedly like aspects of the mind. But no one's claiming there's like a little section of the brain, like just one little lump, and that's the child bit. And
are you telling me that my hypothalamus is not my little baby boy section of my brain?
Maybe yours is, but for everybody else, no.
So, I don't know whether that was an insult or not.
I don't think you need to think too deeply about it. It's just something I said. I don't think it actually makes sense if you like examine it under a microscope. So let's get started on this. So I think the most important thing to understand with regards to transactional analysis is that there are these three ego states. Ego states being like sort of, I mean, what do you think that means?
America.
No. Ego states. Very good. There's actually more than three ego states in America. But
I only recognize three.
Wow. I think that was a declaration of war, Corey. So there are these three sort of models of self, the adult, the child, and the parent, not necessarily in that order. It's usually in the order parent, adult, child. And that's because the adult sits between the parent and the child. We'll get onto that in a second. As in, like, the adult is the mediator between the parent and the child.
Oh, wait, no, I don't know why I'm looking confused, because I have heard this before, and yeah. I do understand what you're saying.
So, and basically, we use this model to analyze transactions, not financial transactions, by the way. Well, at one point, I was, like, just wanting, like, you know how, like, when you're researching an episode, the first thing you might do is scan the Wikipedia page, right?
Yeah.
One of the first things I did was I scanned the Wikipedia page and I asked ChatGPT about it. And I was like,
God,
transactional
Luke.
Analysis, just like give me a quick summary for it, see what it says. And it goes, transactional analysis is helpful when used in business to analyze transactions between companies. And I was like, no, you're an idiot. You're such an idiot. No one calls that transactional analysis. I'm doing a bit of transactional analysis today on my bank statements. Shut up.
Language models are good for learning things, I think.
So what do you think transactions might be?
Oh, like social interactions, right?
Exactly. So we're having a transaction right now. When you interact with another person, when you have any kind of conversation, when you try to come up with a solution to something, when you try to agree on something, anything, any interaction between people is a transaction. So
I don't do any of those things. All interactions for me are by me. I only solve my own problems and I don't give nothing.
We're going to get a crowbar and prise you apart into your parent, adult, and child state. So basically, what transactional analysis says is that when you are having these transactions, these conversations, interactions with people, you are doing this from one of three broad places, right? So those would be the ego states, the parent, the adult, or the child state. Right. So the parent state is our attempt to copy behaviors or attitudes that we picked up from our parents, obviously, but also maybe just from authority figures in general. They're the ways that we think the world should be. They're the ways that we think other people should behave. They're the ways that we think we should behave. And inside of the parent state, we have two sort of sub-states, which are the controlling parent, which is like critical, for example. Mm-hmm. It tries to control, it tries to compel behavior, that kind of thing. And the nurturing parent, the sort of loving parent, right? And these are broad aspects of
mummy and daddy.
Well, but they're broad aspects of mummy and daddy, right? So mummy and daddy might tell you off. They might tell you to do things. Like authority figures might tell you to do things. And then mummy and daddy, hopefully, sometimes will nurture you and go, oh, it's okay. And that's sort of both healthy parts of being a parent, right? On the absolute opposite. Sorry.
News to me.
I just missed that completely.
You say so, buddy.
That's why I used the word hopefully. on the other side, we have this thing called the child state, right? So the child state, what do you think the child state might be? Now you've heard the parent, what do you think the child state might be?
So to draw from popular culture, a recent film, one could say, Pinocchio.
Oh. I actually didn't read about Pinocchio in the literature, but maybe I didn't delve into Jordan Peterson enough.
Pinocchio has Jiminy Cricket, who is the parent, the conscience, right?
Right.
And so Pinocchio, I guess, would be the inner child, which is the one that's just like, I'm whatever want I have, I'm going to seek it out. Right?
Okay.
Is that it? I don't know.
That's part of it, actually. You've really nailed that part of it. So the child state is primarily concerned with feelings. It's about spontaneity, which is what you're talking about here with Pinocchio. But it's also ways we were conditioned to act as a child, right? So it's the things that we think, like, almost like, if I don't do this, something bad will happen because I was trained to do it.
Anxiety.
Potentially. Going to get into specifically mapping transactional analysis onto other concepts like anxiety. But yes, exactly. Like, broadly speaking, yes. The child part of you is the part of you that is, or this part of the child is the part that's like, worried about a consequence for something, like worried that something might happen because you did a bad thing. And that's a result of the training we received, either from parents and authority figures or maybe just from the world in general.
Can I go on a tangent? I'm going to do it anyway. I'm not asking. I'm telling. I'm going on a tangent. So I was sitting down doing something the other day, and every now and then, I wouldn't say it's OCD, right? But every now and then, I feel I need to do something. Something silly. Like, for example, I was eating a burger, and I put the burger down upside down because it was easier, right? It's easier to pick up a burger that's upside down when you put it down that way, right? But it felt like, oh, this is wrong. This is the wrong way to put a burger down. It should be down on its bottom because that's the way that burgers are supposed to go.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, and when, sometimes I do that, and there's this little feeling inside of me, like, it needs to be the right way up or something bad will happen.
Mm.
And like, again, I'm not saying it's like OCD or anything, because it's definitely not. I don't spend nearly enough time doing silly little tasks that don't need to be done, right? To qualify remotely for that. So I was thinking, like, well, what if I just leave it upside down? It's like, well, something bad might happen. Right, but do you really think that you have power over the universe to cause something so bad to happen by leaving a burger upside down? Do you think you have that power? You self-centered piece of, you know, like, how dare you think that? How self-centered can you be? And I was like, oh yeah, I suppose. And then I continued eating my burger and didn't think about it again. That's a way to train yourself out of doing dumb things, I guess. There you go. That's useful, right?
That's really interesting. I mean, this is something I think we'll get into a little bit later as well, about the kind of conversation you had there in your head. But yeah, I mean, essentially, like, again, I will sometimes apply, like, colloquially in this conversation, like, my basic understanding of transactional analysis to have conversations like this. But this is not necessarily how a therapist would say it, and it's definitely not necessarily a valid application of transactional analysis in a clinical setting. But essentially, you could view that as, like, your controlling parent has sort of picked up the broad patterns of the world, that the way the world should be, the sort of safe states of the world, and is leaning on your what is called, which I'll get into, a conditioned child, right? The child that sort of follows those patterns that it learned from the world of how to be safe. And when you are stepping outside of those patterns, it's not necessarily that you have either been told by somebody something bad will happen if you turn your burger upside down and put it down, but you're stepping outside of the safe zone, right? The safe known, like the safe known manifestations of life. And then you're in the unknown, right? And you don't know what will happen. And then that sort of interplay between this conversation that's happening in your head, you could sort of view it in that way. You've got this conditioned child that knows the safe states, that knows the states that it can put the world in where things are okay. And you're stepping outside of that. I think that's pretty interesting.
I'm surprised you got all of that out of me putting a burger down.
To be fair, you did a lot of the work. So let's get back to it. So the child, right? So you know how I said the parent has these sort of two subsections of, like, the nurturing parent and the controlling parent. So the child also has these two subsections, which are called the conditioned child.
But has nice hair.
Shut up. Just repeat that in case people couldn't hear it on the podcast.
Bet it has nice hair.
Bet it has nice hair. Now, the other one is the free child, right? And this is exactly what we've just seen when you said bet it has nice hair. So the conditioned child is the ways that we are trained to behave, as I said. So these are the things that we've adapted. They might be the ways we trained, as in directly being told, or it might also be, it's also something called the adapted child. So it might be like ways that you adapted your own behavior to exist in the scenario you had, right? So you might have, as people do, parents who don't always behave entirely rationally and logically. And if you get a parent that blows up over something small, you become conditioned to not do that thing, even though you weren't specifically told not to do it. But by circumstance, by necessity, in order to avoid bad feelings, you were trained to exist in that way, right? So that's the conditioned child. And that's, again, I will get into this later, but it's not always a bad thing. It's not like any of these states are objectively bad. Although it sounds on the surface like, oh, the conditioned child, that's like the child that's been trained, the child that stays in line, the child that's scared to step outside the boundaries.
Yeah, but then the boundaries could also be, hey, when you point at someone and say, ha ha, you're ugly, that causes bad things to happen. And that makes you feel bad, along with making them feel bad. And so you don't do that. So, conditioned could just be interacting with people in a polite and kind way.
Exactly. For example, as a child, I never listened to my granny when she told me not to touch the iron. I then touched the iron, and I learned very quickly why I'm not meant to touch the iron.
Oh, I have a similar story. I was sat in the car. This is ADHD, by the way. I was sat in the car by myself. I was bored. My parents had gone in to do something. They had been gone for all of maybe 5-10 minutes. And do you know the little, do you know the little things in cars that that used to have to like light cigarettes?
Yes, the cigarette lighter.
The cigarette lighter.
Oh,
right?
You took it out and you stuck your finger.
I put my finger on it. Yeah. I wanted to see. I was like, what? Like, I don't know. Like, this is hot, I guess. But like, what would happen if I touched it? Literally had a ring burn mark on my finger. And my parents got back into the car. I was trying to hide it. But I had a burn on my finger in the shape of a ring. They were like, what is going on? They realized that this supposedly smart child just stuck his finger on a hot object for no reason.
And it was at that moment they should have taken you to a psychiatrist and asked if you had ADHD. But instead,
honest, it there's took many 20 moments years they should have taken me to a psychiatrist. But yeah.
Okay, so this is the controlled child, right? The sort of conditioned child, the adapted child. And then we also have this free child, which is the child that you just demonstrated by saying the conditioned child has nice hair because he's using conditioner, right? Which is the child that is spontaneous,
funny,
maybe funny, creative, free, and uninhibited, basically. Like just absolute spontaneity without really thinking about the consequences or thinking things through very much. So you can see that basically the child and the parent kind of link in different ways. So, for example, the nurturing parent nurtures the ability for a free child, and the controlling parent creates and affects the controlled, adapted child, right?
How long has this concept been around?
So it was published in the 60s in this book, Games People Play. And so it's been around for a fair while, yeah.
You did say that, yeah. No, because there
worry,
was a Simpsons episode.
I often
episode.
Ignore things that you say on the podcast, don't worry.
I didn't ignore it. I just did not remember it. No, there's this episode of The Simpsons called Bart's Inner Child. I think it's season 5-ish. Anyway, this guy comes to town called Brad Goodman, and he says, a lot of what you're saying now, but his conclusion is to just free the inner child, but not the conditioned child, the free child.
Mm.
And then because he's like, oh, this is Bart Simpson, and I'm thinking about it, and the free child is essentially just Bart Simpson, right? Just all just like sort of creativity, impulse, like doing stuff, even if they're like not even really considering consequences or thinking it, just doing things.
Well, and to extend your comparison, the conditioned child is Lisa Simpson.
Oh!
Right, so Lisa is the perfect child, does everything she's told, works really hard, like, works really hard to make the world better, all those things. She's emulating exactly what she thinks is the best way to be.
That is so true. Oh my gosh, and then the parents are probably the parents. That's crazy how this parent-child relationship has shown up in a parent-child relationship. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. Well, yes, but in The Simpsons, Marge is kind of the controlling parent and the nurturing parent, and then Homer is just also a free child.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes to work, but that's sort of it.
I mean, he naps a lot at work. I mean, his work is mostly donuts, napping, and then hijinks make up the rest of it. Very little is actually inspecting the safety of this nuclear power.
So, process of elimination, I guess Maggie needs to be one of the parents.
Maggie does keep people in line. She shot Mr. Burns that one time.
So she's the controlling parent as well. She's helping Marge. She's born into this world. She saw that there are two free children, one adapted child, and one parent doing both nurturing and controlling, and she went, I'll help that one. She's too small to do much nurturing. Maybe she nurtures Marge. She cuddles Marge back, I'm sure. But she helps with a little bit of the parenting by shooting Mr. Burns.
So true. And that's a lesson to you all. If you see your parents struggling, find a billionaire and shoot them.
Well, that's the message of this episode, I guess. So, as I said earlier, you've got this parent and this child, and in the middle of these two states is called the adult state. Now, the adult state is considered to have all the information from the parent and all the information from the child, and crucially, kind of all the information from the present moment, because it's not seeing the world through the lens, essentially, of the past, through the lens of conditioning, right? It has rationality, it is interested in evidence, and from a therapeutic perspective, if you're applying transactional analysis, the adult state is the one that you're trying to strengthen, right? So if you've got people who are stuck in a dynamic where they're often entering the child state, they're often entering the adult state, what you're trying to do is you're trying to go like, right, let's strengthen that adult state so that they can stay in adult as much as possible.
This is sounding a lot like id, ego, and superego, right? Is that the idea, right?
I mean, I haven't researched id, ego, and superego, so I'm not totally sure.
Id would be the sort of child one, mm-hmm. that's more about impulses and just like, yeah, gimme. Feelings, just, you know. The superego is, I think, more the sort of conscience aspect of it, which would be the sort of parent. And then the ego is the sort of self, you know, the one that is trying to mediate the other two.
Okay, so that's probably quite helpful. I think probably some of the stuff that Byrne added to this was, for example, having not researched id, ego, superego, I can't say for sure, but he probably added stuff like the subcategories of parent. So, for example, you've got these two categories of parent or two broad categories of parent. You've got subcategories of child. But there was also a bunch of stuff that is in the games people play, which we'll get into to a certain extent in this episode. It's very complex, but we'll get into it a little bit later, which is about how these interactions can happen between people externally, and how people aren't necessarily aware of what they're doing all the time, and how they can be playing games with each other in order to fulfill certain needs they have, emotional needs. I will get into this later properly. And also, I wonder whether id, ego, superego is more internal. It's more like thinking about the id, ego, superego inside you and how that happens inside. Whereas transactional analysis has quite a lot of emphasis on looking at how you are part of the transactions you experience, right? So if somebody, for example, you know, we've talked about this in the past, psychiatry has one of its problems that I think psychiatrists are generally aware of, or psychology as well, psychology actually specifically, is that they place a lot of emphasis on individual responsibility, right? So if you go into a psychiatrist and you go, I'm going to mix those up from time to time. If you go in to speak to a therapist, right, and you say like, oh, the world's unfair and there's nothing and I feel like the stuff is stacked against me for a variety of reasons. Maybe it's my gender, maybe it's my race, maybe it's my economic circumstance.
These are all things that Lucas said specifically to his therapist.
the therapist's perspective is generally to try and figure out ways that you can help yourself, right? And not necessarily to just criticize the world and say the world is unfair and unjust and you're right to feel bad about it. That might be a part of it, but ultimately they're looking for solutions. And that can mean that I think sometimes psychology can feel like a kind of right-leaning field. It can feel a little bit conservative because it's ultimately saying, it can feel like it's saying, You're the problem. Individual responsibility. You're the problem. Get on with it and figure out the ways you're perpetuating it rather than blaming the world. And that can be a little bit invalidating.
Yeah, well, I think that really to me sounds a lot like Jordan Peterson. Mm. You know, that's what Jordan Peterson will sort of say. You are the problem. You need to fix this. No one else can sort this. And I think that's a really, limited view, mm-hmm. of what the sort of field could and should be, really, in that, look, yes, there are problems with the world that you can't solve, right? You need to focus on what you can solve, right? There are things that you can do, almost no matter what situation you're in, to slightly help yourself in some way, right? In that, even if you can look into the sort of CBT aspect of it, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, looking at your sort of thought patterns and looking at the sort of cycles that you get yourself into, yes, the external could be bad, but you could make your internal slightly better. Obviously, with like really bad situations, getting out of the situation is the best thing. But I think for most people, generally, there is something to be said for just feeling better in yourself, even if the situation externally doesn't change too much. Obviously, the outcome of that isn't, you know, there are no problems in the world. You are the only problem. But there is some benefit to sort of looking at what you can do. I think just ignoring the fact that there are genuine reasons to feel certain ways. Like, talking about climate anxiety, for example. I hate the concept of climate anxiety. People are going to be getting the comments telling me, oh, climate anxiety is actually when you have anxiety that is unreasonable at the climate. No. I don't think there's any level of anxiety about climate change that is unreasonable at this point. I think any level of anxiety is perfectly fine. World is ending. No one's doing anything about it. People are attacking protesters in the streets. Insane. Insane behavior. If you feel anxious about that, good. You should. And the only reason people are telling you not to is because you can't be a little capitalist cog in the machine if you're anxious. But yeah, no, I mean, like, I think you should focus on problem solving, right? And sometimes the only problems you can solve are internal. And that's where this sort of therapy becomes useful. But then obviously there are situations where the external is what needs to be changed.
Yeah, but unfortunately, society is not going to therapy.
Shoot a billionaire. I've said it once and I'll say it again. I'm going to say it's a joke because I could get in a lot of trouble. I'm joking.
Okay, so I want to move on to sit you down for a test, Corey. So I've taught you the base.
But I've been sitting this whole time.
All right, sit down more. Great. Now stop slouching. Sorry, that was my controlling parent speaking to your adapted child. Stop slouching. Anyway, so I'm going to give you this example situation that it comes from a video by Theremin Trees about and transactional analysis. Do you know Theremin Trees?
I don't. Wait, as in Theremin the instrument?
I think so.
And Trees the plant?
Let's not read too much into it. So imagine you're in your house, right? And you look out.
I don't need to imagine.
We are in your house. So I'll imagine I'm in my house. Imagine you're in my house. Okay, imagine you're in my house and you look out the window and you see someone sunbathing naked in the garden, right? We're going to go through each.
Wait, hold on. Your house?
In my house.
The only people doing that at your house would be you or your wife.
Or my cat. She often sunbathes naked in the garden.
Okay, good, because that's my favorite option there, out of the three.
What are you saying about my wife?
She's your wife!
Okay, fine. Well, that's very good of you. Okay, so imagine you're looking out the window in my house and you see my neighbour, John, sunbathing naked in the garden. My neighbour is actually called John. Shout out to John. How's your newborn child? Anyway, they've got a child. It's very sweet. I actually haven't seen the child, but I hear it cry sometimes. We're going to go through each ego state and I'm going to ask you to think about how each of them might respond. And you can try this at home listening too. Have a think about it. Maybe if you're watching on YouTube, you can even like answer in the comments, like add a comment of what your guesses were as we went through. So someone's naked in my next door garden. John's naked in my next door garden. How would you think that, like, what are some examples of how a critical or controlling parent might respond to John sunbathing naked in his garden?
What's he doing there? Getting his bits all out? That's not right. Put your bits away. Put your bits away, John.
Exactly. So there might be a belief, for example, there may be lots of other response types, but this is the example that I've got here. Believing that nudity is in some way inherently wrong, is something shameful, is something that's just like, what the hell are they doing? What the hell are they doing? Like, why are they inflicting this upon me? Why are they doing this bad behavior? Et cetera, et cetera. That kind of
middle class white person.
Middle class Karen. What about a nurturing parent? What might a nurturing parent do about this situation?
Oh, we'd better put on some sunscreen.
Exactly. Did you watch this video before?
That was literally the first thing to come to mind.
So they might try, at the extreme, they might start lathering sunscreen on the person. They're trying to sort of like, they're imagining.
In one particular area. This is a different kind of story. Now.
Don't want to burn the tip, John. oh my God, I really hope John never hears this. This is so funny.
Oh my God, this is your actual neighbour.
It's my actual neighbour, John.
I hope I never meet that man. I don't want to look him in the eyes.
He's very lovely. We have conversations outside a lot. He's a very sweet man. Okay, so you might start lathering this person in sunscreen. You might go, oh, you really need to get inside. It's a really hot day. You're sort of almost infantilizing the person as a nurturing parent, right? So how about, on the other side, how might a conditioned child respond to seeing John naked in his garden out my window?
Telling on him.
That's
literally all I can think of.
That's interesting. Telling on him. So going and speaking. I'm not going to name his partner. Going and speaking to his.
Dox yourself, yeah, right. And your neighbor.
So going and speaking to his partner. That might be something. It's not what I've got here. What I've got is like having ideas of shame around nudity and feeling embarrassed and feeling like bad for looking and feeling like that kind of thing. This is a sort of like ways that you might have been conditioned. Now, going and telling also might be the conditioned child. If you were sort of, you might call the police, right? That might be more of a parent thing to do, I suppose, like a critical parent, because you're going, this is behavior that needs to stop.
True.
But yes, so there may be some conditioning around nudity, around that kind of thing. And a free child, what do you think a free child, an unhindered child might do upon seeing John sunbathing naked out
strip
my window?
Strip naked and join him.
Strip naked and join him, especially without regard for how that might make John feel.
He's gonna lie naked in my view and not let me strip naked and join him? Rude, John. Very rude.
Okay, so now let's leave all these different viewpoints behind and think about how an adult, a rational adult might respond to this situation.
Nothing, man. If I see my neighbor naked in the garden, I'm leaving him.
Exactly. So crucially, what you're doing there as an adult is you're projecting...
That was the right answer?
Well, more or less, yeah. Crucially, I mean, you're projecting that the adult you're looking at also has agency, also has perfect ability to be responsible for themselves. It might take into account the information that it's receiving from its internal child and its internal parent and go, oh, I feel uncomfortable. I'm going to not look out the window for the rest of the day. It might be like, take on the information that like, this shouldn't be happening and, you know, go, oh, well, what are the laws? Like, is John doing anything wrong? If not, then leave him alone, right? That kind of thing, right? Not being presumptuous, just letting them be as an adult, right? They respect the other person as an adult, capable of making their own decisions and not try and encroach on them. If they want to join them sunbathing, maybe they might ask. Maybe they might consider other neighbors. If they did feel a little bit uncomfortable, maybe they might think, well,
other neighbors, do you want to join us? We're John and I getting naked. Do you want to come join big old neighbor naked sunbathe?
There is, to be fair, there is a day, isn't there? There's like naked,
naked there are many days
naked gardening day or something when people are encouraged to go and garden naked.
That is something I would not want to do naked. There are sharp things that you're cutting with. There are plants that are sharp. There are plants that are stingy. Gardening naked, underwear for gardening, I think, is a safety. If you're going to wear gloves for it, wrap. Continue.
I think naked gardening is probably fine. As long as you can wear gloves. You can wear gloves because you're...
If you're going to wear gloves to protect your hands,
yeah.
Why not protect your genitals? That's all I'm asking.
Because it's naked gardening day. You can wear a little cup if you want, like they wear in cricket.
I'll wear a big cup, thank you very much.
Okay, well, let's not get into that. Anyway,
the biggest you've got, sir!
So as we're talking about this... Hopefully you might start noticing the aspects of your own mind which are in accordance of these ego states. You might start thinking about like moments in which your critical parent might be triggered, your child might be triggered, times you might let your inner free child off the leash and just be fun and creative. Do you have a little scared, conditioned child that's in there and wants to be spontaneous but is scared of the consequences, right? And in the middle of that, you might also find this adult that's most of the time, hopefully, got it all together, is balancing out these different needs and is weighing them up against the reality of the world. This is the adult, the sort of truth seeker. So just out of interest, Corey, not wanting to do therapy on you here, but like, are there any moments in your life where you can feel like, oh, I can see where this aspect comes in, like that kind of thing?
You know, actually, I was thinking, right, whenever I'm on a stage, right, for example, I was in a music video not that long ago, and I was on a stage pretending to do karaoke, and there were people there who were obviously pretending to be my friends and enjoying the karaoke, and I swear to God, anytime I'm on a stage, free child, 100%. Like, maybe like a ghost of a parent and a ghost of an adult in there being like echoing in your head, like, maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe you shouldn't say that. But free child has got the reins and is doing whatever. I swear to God, you put me on a stage, you put a microphone in my hand, I'm running wild, baby.
I feel like that was particularly evident when we were doing... I mean, I've not seen you on every stage I've ever been on, but when we did Sci Guys Live in London, you had such a fun little giggle when you said something naughty. And I think that was like... You've done it a few times in this episode as well, of just like, when you say something naughty that you... Oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that, but it landed well and it was really funny.
I just want laughter. Just give me attention. Positive or negative. Hopefully positive, but you know. Go either way.
Okay, so the reality of this is that basically what happens in real life is we're not our adult states all the time. Pretty much nobody's going to be their adult state all the time. But we move between these states in response to the world, right? In response to our experiences and our transactions with people. So
transactions, Luke?
Cool.
Transaction?
No, stop it.
Transaction.
Are we leaving that in?
Oh, I'm leaving that in. Ding-a-ling-ling, it sounds like the ad bell is a-ringing for SciGuys Live in London, a live podcast which will be held on Tuesday the 26th of September 2023 at Jamboree, which is near King's Cross in London, obviously. But it won't just be us, the SciGuys, there for you. We'll also have a special guest. Why don't you go and guess who it is in the comments or wherever it is you guess things if you're listening on an audio podcast? I don't know. And that is not all. It's not just going to be us, the SciGuys, a special guest doing a live podcast. We'll also have a meet and greet, a Q&A, and maybe even a fun interactive quickfire quiz for you that show up as well. So go ahead and get your tickets at sciguys.co.uk/tickets. That is sciguys.co.uk/tickets. And if you join our Patreon, you might just get a little discount there too. All right, back to the show.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Transactional analysis. Right. So now I want to move on to transactions with people, right? So what the theory says is that imagine you're both in your adult state, and then for whatever reason, you, whether consciously or unconsciously, you move into another state, right? You might move into parent state, you might move into child state, you might move into a subcategory of those states. And it might be to achieve something, it might be in response to something because you were triggered by something. There's lots of reasons why that might happen. So imagine me and my friend Simon are in our rational adult states.
Who right? is Simon? Why don't I know Simon?
Maybe it should just be John again.
Leave John alone.
I've got Simon in my notes, so I'm going to go Simon, right? So me and Simon bopping around in our adult states. If Simon isn't very good at something, maybe he's crap at driving, maybe he's late for something, whatever, I might enter into a judging, scolding, sort of controlling parent state in order to criticize John. I might do that deliberately because I want to make John...
Even though John didn't do anything wrong and it's Simon we're talking about?
To criticize Simon. John's a perfect little angel. So to criticize Simon. John's a great driver. John's never done anything wrong in his life. So to criticize Simon, right? So
John is not going to listen this far after you've already got him.
After I talked about rubbing sunblock on his pee-pee, I think he turned off.
Or maybe... He stayed listening to see where it would go.
Well, it's gone to me saying John's a great driver. So there we go. So I might be moving into this parent state in order to criticize.
You'll have to ride with John. Sorry.
Stop. Stop being a free child.
I couldn't.
You need to strengthen your adult and your critical parent.
I lasted all of 10 seconds and that's good for me.
Okay. Stop being a free child. Stop making cum jokes. Right. Anyway, so no more cum jokes. It's a rule. So Simon is crap at driving, right? So Simon's really crap at driving and I might move into my parent state in order to criticize him. I might do this consciously because I want to make Simon feel small, or I might do it unconsciously. I might do it for another reason. Maybe internally, I'm actually quite scared of Simon's crap driving. I don't handle that in the best way and I become quite critical. So I go like, Simon, you're useless. You're stupid. You need to do better. Like that kind of thing. And Simon might switch into his little scared child, right? He might switch into this conditioned child who goes, I know, I'm rubbish. I'm sorry. Feel scared, feel ashamed and feel small.
Yeah.
Equally, on the other side, you might have failed to do some university coursework. You might go into child and you might plead your lecturer for help. Say you're struggling, you can't do it for some reason, and you're basically trying to push them into their nurturing parent to try and console you, to try and help. Crucially, no one in this situation might know that they're doing this. These might all be automatically trained responses. Maybe as a child, you got away with stuff by going, I'm really sorry. And your parent didn't stay in adult and explain why that needed to not happen. They went, oh, don't worry. And they forgave you. And it became a pattern, right? That you get away with stuff by being a baby, right?
Know too many people like that.
But it's not necessarily something to be judged necessarily. This is like an automatic trained behavior. We pick a lot of this stuff up before we're 5 years old. Most of it, I think, according to the theory, is done by we're roughly 20. But a decent chunk of it is done by 5 years old. And I'll just take this moment to explain that this is one of the reasons why I'm saying do not apply this model based on what I'm saying, because there's like five layers more of this where there's like the parent within the child and the child within the parent.
That's
and like,
wrong.
Free child, stop it. That's wrong. Stop. So there's lots of layers on top of this, which I don't even necessarily understand, because it takes a long time to understand this stuff.
Yeah, so in all seriousness, if you're thinking about taking serious psychological advice from a podcast, see a therapist. Not to cover the stuff in the podcast, just because you're taking psychological advice from a podcast and that's something you should probably get checked out. Continue, Luke.
And so I was talking about how there are like these like ego states inside ego states, right? I read this in passing when I was reading a paper about this. I honestly couldn't understand it well enough to put it into this episode. And different ones of those, like if there's like the child inside the parent, that one might be ready by the time you're five, but then one of them might not be fully developed till you're 20, right? It's really, really complicated. The last example I want to give, which is maybe a bit more of a nefarious example. Have you heard of weaponized incompetence?
Oh, I'm not really sure. Luke, can you maybe, I don't know, can you tell me more about it? I'm not really sure.
Okay.
Also, speaking of, I'm really struggling to I'm not really sure how to do this switchy stuff that you usually do.
Oh, yeah.
You're switching the cameras.
Oh, I'll do it.
Can you?
Pass it here. I'll do it.
Okay. Thank you, Luke.
That's okay. So I can do it.
I'm trying to.
Yeah.
This is me doing it right now. Hold on. I'm doing it. I've cut to myself again. And now. Back to you. Are you talking?
This is a great audio experience. So weaponized incompetence is exactly what Corey's just displayed here. It's been massive on TikTok in the last few years, and it's often experienced primarily by women in relationships. So I'll give you a definition here. Weaponized incompetence is when somebody deliberately does a task badly or pretends not to know how to do a task so that the other person will do it instead. And I think, personally, I think this can be perfectly analyzed through the lens of transactional analysis. So you have an interaction between a parent mode and a child mode here. So I'm sitting in my house, I'm an adult man in adult mode, but there's something I need to do. I don't want to do it. So I go into child and I go, maybe in a whittle voice, oh, I don't know how to do it. I did it badly. Oh, I'm a little baby. And the other person, often a woman in this situation, will basically, whether they mean to or not, go into parent mode, specifically into nurturing parent mode, and just do the task. And that can be a kind of dynamic that exists within a relationship for a very long time until it's checked, basically. And it's really helpful that people are talking about this stuff, because essentially we then gain models. You don't have to understand transactional analysis in order to understand the model of weaponized incompetence, right? Although it can be perfectly viewed through that lens as well. So you're trying to trigger that nurturing parent by being a little baby child.
You know, Noah does something kind of similar to this, except it's much more overt, in that what Noah will do is be like, oh, if maybe you're getting up and we'll both be sat on the sofa in the living room, both chilling.
Yeah.
You know, I have no intention of getting up. And he'll be like, oh, if you're maybe getting up anytime soon, oh, it would be really cool if you could maybe get this thing. I'm like, just ask me to get up and get the thing.
Yeah.
Just ask me to get up and get the, and I'll do it.
Yeah.
Don't be like, oh, but maybe, you know, like, oh, little baby bird. Like, oh, I can't get up. It's fine.
Yeah.
You just asked me to do something.
It's really interesting one. I think this is a really good moment to talk about it as well, is that I did mention this earlier, but I think it's important to know that what's happening there we'll take that example, and it may be consciously done, right? It's sort of a joke.
Oh, to be honest, no, it's entirely consciously done. I could call him up right now and I'll say, hey, do you know that thing that you do? He's like, yes. And I'm like, why do you do it? He's like, it's funny. It's overt manipulation, I think is what he calls it. It's like very obviously manipulating me. And I'm like, that's
okay. This is really interesting, right? So it's actually not, I'm not a psychologist, right? I'm not going to make a claim here.
What?
But okay. I didn't want to get onto this till later, but I'll quickly touch on it now. Right. So there's this idea called an ulterior interaction, which is basically where an interaction is ostensibly, on the surface, looks like an adult-to-adult interaction, but it has a secret underlying either child-to-parent interaction or a parent-to-child interaction. And it's where basically you're sort of, whether consciously or not, pretending to do an adult interaction, but you're sort of slipping a secret message in there for an alternate ego state, right? For either the parent or the child of the other person. And you get the plausible deniability of it being an adult-to-adult interaction. And I would go so far as to reach and say that doing it as a where you think that's the joke, where it's like, oh, I'm doing it as a joke, is actually still actually part of, it's actually part of it, right? It's actually because it's like, what you really want to do is you want to ask for the thing and you want to ask the parent of the other person, right? That's what you're trying to do. You think that the most effective way of doing that is to be a child and ask the parent mode to do the thing. But your adult knows that that's sort of socially faux pas. Your adult knows that's an adult. Like, this is, you're an adult and you shouldn't really be doing that. And so you do it, sort of double do it, where you like do it, but you pretend that you're doing it as a joke. But the message still gets through. The message still gets through and you still get what you need. Now, that's not at all to criticize Noah, but that would be...
Criticize Noah. I hate it. I will do it regardless. That's my point. You don't need to...
See, I don't do that. When I have a situation where somebody says, can you do this thing in like a little baby way? I go, I'm perfectly willing to do the thing, but can you just ask me like a normal person, please?
Asking Luke to do something? Luke will do anything you ask him to do, almost without boundary. Like, Luke is very good at trying to do things for other people.
I'm getting better at the boundaries.
but there is this thing where if you ask him to do something in a roundabout way, he'll just be like, just tell me what you want me to do.
Yes. Yes. I will do things for you. You don't have to do this, but, like... Just don't play the game.
Like, he just cuts straight to, it's like, no, tell me what it is you want, and I'll do it. Just get to that point.
And I think a lot of the time that sort of strategy. I've talked about people with this about people. Sorry, I've talked with people who I know who do this, and the reason I feel comfortable talking about it with them is because I'm actually going to do the thing they want. They want me to do, and I find it interesting, and I want to reassure them that actually you can just ask me for favors and I will just do them. You don't have to do this thing here, this little dance, because the reason
you make people do little dances. Do a little dance for me and then maybe I'll get you something.
And because I can sort of see the weird game that's been playing, I feel like I'm supposed to play along with the weird game, and I don't want to play along with the weird game, but I will do the thing, right?
Yeah.
But also I think some of the time that sort of strategy comes from a place of not wanting to feel in debt to somebody else. So like asking something in a roundabout way, it comes maybe from the fact that you feel bad for asking for favors. Like you feel like you're not allowed to ask for favors. And so you sort of, a lot of the time people will use phrasing like, would you like to? For something they want you to do.
That's one that gets you every single time.
And it's like, well, I don't want to, but I will. But I don't want you to ask. I don't want you to place the desire in my head sneakily. Now, I talked to a therapist about this, and he was like, I think this is fine, but I think that basically you're sort of, to a certain extent, you're not willing to play that game that the other person wants to play, but you are willing to do the thing. So I don't think it's bad that you're. But I do pull people up on it quite a bit when they go, "Would you like to do this?" And I go, "Can you just ask me to do it, please?" Because I think that it comes through, it's sort of, it feels to me at least a little bit manipulative in that they're trying to get me to do something without having asked me to do it. So they don't have to feel like, they're in my debt now because I did a thing for them. It sort of feels, I don't know, there's something about it that just throws me off and gives me a lot of sense. Like internal, oh, I feel like... what's the word when you have like cognitive dissonance, right? Mm. I feel a great deal of cognitive dissonance when I'm being asked to do something as an opportunity. Would I like to do it?
I think that makes sense for certain things, you know, like, oh, would you like to take the bins out? Or, look, would you like to pick me up from the airport at 6 a.m.?
That would be such a weird question, right? That would be such a weird... Why would somebody phrase it like that?
Would you like to do it, Luke? Would you like to?
Not at all.
Oh, so you don't like me? You don't like me as a friend?
Will I pick you up from the airport? Yes, I will.
But you'll hate every moment of it?
Maybe, because I'd rather be in bed. Obviously. Do I want it? No, I bloody well don't. What are you talking about?
No, so it makes sense to reject it in some instances there. But that's kind of reminding me of... There's a lot I've been seeing a lot of autism stuff on TikTok recently, and there are there are times when people can kind of come to sort of friction in conversation, wherein a lot of autistic people would rather just be direct in a sort of like, okay, well, don't say, oh, would you like pizza, when what you actually mean is, I'm hungry and I want to get takeout. Do you want pizza as takeout? And if not that, would you want to get something else?
Sure.
Right? And it's not the same thing there, but
it's on the same dimension, right? My thing's like halfway to that thing you've just described.
Absolutely. And I find it really interesting because there are instances, and I've seen this, and I've seen people say, well, this is, why do holistics do this? And it's just like a worse way of communicating. Just say what it is that you mean.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, coming from the position of not really intuitively understanding that kind of interaction and seeing it as superfluous and seeing it as pointless, you know, ultimately. But it isn't. It actually isn't. Like, yes, it's silly and arbitrary, but then a lot of social interaction is silly and arbitrary. And these things, they do serve social purposes in some cases, you know, like it can feel rude to say to say things directly to people in some cases. And you may say, oh, well, what's the point of that? But there is, I guess, a use in having politeness be a concept, right? Like caring about sort of other people's feelings and like having that sort of dimension from like polite to impolite can be useful. For example, if you want to be fucking impolite to someone, like
this is exactly why I asked a therapist about it, because I was going basically like, am I just being a pedant here? Am I like picking people up
yes, but
like, am I just picking people up on their language to make them feel small? And I was like, I don't think that's what I'm doing, but I just want to check from somebody else that I'm not just being like a dick. Because the reason I'm doing it is because it feels, whether rightly or wrongly, it feels like I'm being manipulated through language, because I'm then asking, if I turn the language, would I like to take the bins out, into, I go, well, no, I don't want to take the bins out. Okay, but then they're really asking me to take the bins out. But then I'm responding to a question, would I like to, with yes, which means I've just said I want to take the bins out, which I don't. So why am I being... That's what it does in my head, which it doesn't do to everyone else.
Not necessarily, but the alternative would be sort of...
Could you take the bins out, please?
Can you take the bins out, please? And then if you're having to ask someone to do things like that often, right, it can then put you in a position of feeling like...
A nagger.
I'm a nagger, you know... That's our word. I go crazy when I don't have like to be the person presenting all of this stuff. No. So you know, you could have negative feelings, you know, saying things directly to other people, saying, "Could you take the bins out?" Or like, I want you to take the bins out, please, sort of thing. Like, and so there are other ways of going about it. Not just saying, "Would you like to do that?" But also just pointing out that there isn't a problem there. So like, oh, the bin is really full. And like, you know, I've seen this with, again, a lot of these sort of conversations on TikTok with autistic people talking to an autistic audience, you know, describing these sort of interactions and how they sort of view them. And I found it really interesting because they're like, well, why wouldn't you just say that the bin is full and you'd like me to take it out? And the reason is that because ultimately it can make you feel like controlling if you have to ask for these things a lot. And so there are more polite ways of going about it where you don't need to put yourself, it's basically exactly what you're saying there, Luke, where you feel manipulated because people are asking if you'd like to do something. And in a sense, they almost are manipulating you, but not in a serious bad way, in a way of, I don't want to feel as though I'm making you do something or controlling you. And so I'm going to give you sort of the sort of choice. I'm going to say, hey, there's this problem there, and I've pointed at the problem, and so then you will be aware of the problem, then solve it. Obviously, that comes to that becomes a problem when people don't necessarily intuitively like get that referencing this thing requires these following actions. But you know, if you do intuitively understand that sort of mode of communication, then it can be really useful in a way to sort of like help both of your feelings. And I get it, being direct can be way better in a lot of situations, but I wouldn't poo-poo indirect communication outright. I think it can be somewhat useful.
Yeah, and I suppose exactly like you're saying, like in the example of like, can you take the bin, like would you like to take the bins out, I was talking about this from the angle of like, well, I don't want to. Can you ask me properly?
Ooh, let's. I'm sorry. I just want to be clear. Let's not say properly, because language. There's no proper way. You know what I mean? Like, I know what you're saying. Okay. I know what you're saying.
But as in, ask me the question you're really asking me. Like, say what you mean. Like, say what you're actually asking me. But then ultimately, like, if I'm talking about that from my perspective of, like, that feels like manipulative in that you're asking me to do something without thinking you're asking me to do something, without feeling like you're asking me to do something, maybe in cases like can you take the bins out, it's because actually it's both people's responsibility and the other person doesn't want to feel in debt to you for having asked because they're not in debt to you for having asked because it's everyone's responsibility to make sure the house is nice. So maybe is that kind of where you're getting at? Is like, especially if you're somebody who is frequently having to ask people to do things, but it's for everyone's benefit that they're done.
Sure, but alternatively, it could even be that it is that person's responsibility. You know, for example, like, you know, in our house, I do the food bin because someone, not naming any names, gets very disgusted by doing the food bin, and it's an upsetting task to do. So yeah. I'll do the food bin, right? Yeah. Which, fine, I don't care. Give me that smelly food. I actually think it smells kind of nice sometimes. why am I like telling myself this way? But you know what I mean. And so, for example, in a situation where you've got one person having a responsibility that they're not taking care of, it can come off as controlling or rude or pushy to sort of be like, hey, you've not done this thing. Can you do this thing, please? And I know like there are situations, like living situations I've been in where I've got to the point of being just very blunt with people and being like, do this thing that you said you would do and you haven't done it. And, well, in one instance, someone got very upset at that. Like, literally, they said they would take the bins out. And, like, after, like, maybe about a week of not doing, taking out their own rubbish, their own rubbish, they put it, like, on the kitchen table. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, and they got really upset at me being direct. But, you know what I mean? Like, if it can be upsetting for people to be told something directly because it can feel like you're doing something wrong, like you're causing a problem. I'm not happy with you, and it can feel like someone's entering that sort of parent role, right?
Well, that's actually really interesting. There is that ultimately, I think what you're touching on to get back towards transactional analysis in some sort of direction. What you're touching on there is that if you're talking to somebody adult to adult, or you're attempting to speak as a rational person to a rational person, and you're falling on deaf ears, you might eventually be compelled to speak parent to child because for whatever reason, that's the only way that stuff actually gets done, right? Is that sort of where you're touching on? Is if you ask someone politely lots of times as a rational adult and it doesn't happen, eventually you're either going to become frustrated and have your parent activated and scold the child because they're behaving like a child, and that might be because you want to scold them because you're annoyed, but it also might be because for whatever reason action is better executed through that person speaking to their inner sort of child who's doesn't want bad consequences, as opposed to their rational adult who doesn't seem to actually execute any of the things they will say they will execute.
Yeah,
is that
I
kind of what you're saying?
Yeah.
And that's really important there, because you know, there are, it's, this is not all like adult to child, child to adult, child to parent, parent to child is always bad. It's just a way of analysing, why are we talking to each other like this? Why are these sort of cycles happening? And there are actually, which we'll get onto later, circumstances in which certain types of ego state communications are actually very helpful in conveying information other than adult to adult. Obviously, adult to adult is best, but it doesn't always work in every situation.
Well, if you're consoling someone, right? If someone's upset, you don't want, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It can, like, being in a sort of parent and child state would make sense if you're trying to console someone when they're upset about something and not have the expectations that they sort of
must be rational
about it. They must be rational about all things. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like I know that, like, I've had friends and people close to me that when they've been really upset, you know, you'll look past them being rude or bristling. Like, I've had a friend like being like I was trying to help them out and they were very, very, very directly rude. And I was like,
yeah,
of course, you have every right to be like directly rude to my face because A, I know you don't mean it because you're just upset. And B, if you doing this is letting you blow off at least a little bit of steam, then fine. And then you come back like 2 days later, you're like, oh, I'm really sorry.
Now, so, that's like fascinating, because that's an example of exactly the kind of goal. I think that's an example, again, not a psychologist. That's an example, I think, of where somebody is entering a parent state, right? And is trying to get you down into child state. and you're staying an adult. And that's quite a desire. It's not necessarily, you're staying and going, I understand why you're doing this. You're blowing off some steam. I respect that. We'll chat about it in a couple of days, and respecting why they're doing it, not being forced into, oh, I'm scared, I'm going to back down. But like staying an adult and staying rational, I think that would be seen as quite a healthy response. Now, the thing is, I do want to say quickly is that while I've said, you know, oh, if you speak to someone adult to adult and they don't actually do things, sometimes it can be effective to speak parent to child, that would still be indicative of like there's something wrong with this relationship. Like I don't want to go so far as to say there's something wrong with the relationship, but there's some stuff you guys need to work on.
Well, there could be an imbalance there, right?
Like I don't want to say it's a healthy thing to continuously be speaking parent to child to somebody, right? That's what I'm getting at.
No, yeah, I mean, yeah. If it's indicative of a lack of respect for the other person, or if it involves putting, you know, if it involves a power imbalance, or if it involves putting undue sort of pressure or responsibility on the other person. I mean, it could go either way, right? It could be the sort of weaponized incompetence thing you were talking about earlier. So it could be someone taking the role of a child to force someone else into the role of parent, so that the person in the role of child has fewer responsibilities, right? But it could also be the person taking the role of a parent, you know, enact sort of pressure over the person they're putting to the position of child. You know, it could go either way.
Yeah.
And I guess what you're saying is, if I can, you know, take words from your brain, perhaps, or paraphrase them, or make them up, who knows? Yeah. What I guess you're saying is that these sort of interactions themselves aren't unhealthy, but a consistent pattern of one interaction may be indicative of an unhealthy relationship.
Exactly. And that's exactly where we're going now, actually.
To an unhealthy relationship? Yay!
So these examples were a scolding parent receiving an apologizing conditioned child, a scared and overwhelmed child receiving a nurturing parent, etc., etc., etc. These are called complementary transactions. So a complementary transaction is, it's not as positive as it sounds. Complementary is having quite a positive spin on it. But a complementary transaction is where the ego state addressed is the ego state which responds. So if I switch to controlling parent and I want to speak to your adapted child and my message is designed to reach your adapted child, and you then switch to adapted child and respond in kind to my controlling parent, this is complementary, right? So it's a transaction where the part of you I'm trying to speak to is responding to me and it from the place I'm trying to speak to it, and you in turn are responding back in the appropriate way to the part I'm speaking from. Right? Does that make sense?
No, I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So what's fascinating about complementary transactions is essentially they can go on forever. These are probably some of the reasons people end up in therapy with like a general feeling of like, there's just something not quite right about our relationship, but it's not like we're constantly coming to blows. It's not like there's just like a dynamic, which I think could be better. Right. Now, that's my opinion, by the way, that bit about why people might go to therapy. That's my opinion. But couples therapy, there's actually a really interesting BBC show called Couples Therapy, where couples have therapy. And you see,
insane the names they're coming up with these days.
I actually heard of the show and it was like, it's a show where people have couples therapy. And I went, I play it. Search Couples Therapy. I might be able to find it. And it's called Couples Therapy. I went, cool. Easy. Right. So these are complementary transactions. They are stable. They avoid some conflict and they enable a level of effective communication between people. Right. So this aspect of the parent is able to communicate effectively with this aspect of the child, for example. Adult to adult is also a complementary transaction, usually the most effective because it's rational. It's seeking facts. It's working together to find an agreement, that kind of thing. So what other types of transactions do you think there might be? Which ego states could speak to which ego states, and how do you think that might turn out? No pressure.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, what is it? Free child and conditioned child. I feel like they'd have a sort of like Bart and Lisa relationship, maybe.
Sure, yeah, but that
solving little mysteries and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean that's just relationships between children. Some of them like wanting to be perfect, right?
And solving little mysteries.
What I'm getting at here, where I'm trying to lead you, is what are called crossed transactions, which are transactions which are not complementary. They often don't last very long.
So, like a parent.
Like
you're
exactly.
Trying to parent someone.
I'm trying to parent
and
you.
And they're trying to parent you back.
You're trying to parent me back. And we're just exploding bigger and bigger, trying to push the other person until eventually what happens is one of our childs gets triggered, probably, right? So remember my friend Simon who sucks at driving, right? I switched to parent and I go, you're useless at driving. You're an idiot. You're endangering other people. You're so selfish, right? And Simon, rather than going into child as he did before and going, I'm sorry, I'm so rubbish, I'm so useless, please forgive me. Instead, he goes into scolding parent. So how might Simon's scolding parent respond to me scolding him?
Don't be a backseat driver. I'm driving. What are you doing,
how
boy?
How dare you talk to me like that? What on earth gives you the right to treat me so poorly? There are plenty of things that you suck at. And I might go, oh God, get over yourself. Get some driving lessons. What's wrong with you? Such a baby. These kind of interactions are
the ones that go on in Luke's head whilst he's driving.
What? I'm quite good at driving. Anyway, what? Stop scolding me as a parent. These kind of interactions are unstable. They will not last a very long time. They might result in a physical fight, or they might result in a switch to a child state. So, for example, I might eventually back down and go, okay, right, look, sorry, I'm really sorry. I was just scared. I was really scared that you were driving erratically. And I know you got your license, but I didn't feel safe. And that came out wrong, and I'm really sorry. Oh, please forgive me. I'm a little baby, right?
I don't forgive you. You're right in that you were wrong. That's the correct reaction, right? I win the therapy medal, right?
Yes, you win the therapy medal. Good. Now, alternatively, you could come out of a cross transaction by creating a complementary adult to adult transaction, right? So we're freaking out to each other.
We're blowing.
Me and Simon, we be blowing.
They blowing each other hard.
That's another way of getting out of a bad transaction.
Like just, bonobos.
Just sucking off Simon. Anyway.
The way to get out of a bad interaction is to start sucking off Simon. Doesn't matter who the interaction's with.
Just...
Simon, buddy, I need your help. You gotta help me out here. I need
the
to suck you off.
Shopkeeper's being really rude.
My wife and I were about to split up, but sucking you off, I think, is gonna solve it.
So if you're fighting and you're going, you suck at driving, how dare you speak to me like that? Well, you're big, blah, 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 blah. One of you could come down to adult and go, right, can we just chill out for a second? Look, I spoke out of turn. You're speaking out of turn a little bit too, but, you know, can we just figure out what's going on here? And then Simon, he might stay in at parent and go, no, blah, blah, blah. Or he might go, okay, yeah, sure. Sorry, I'm not very good at driving sometimes. I do need to get better. And then I go, well, yeah, and I really shouldn't have freaked out. And then you might actually advocate for your... If I was scared of Simon's driving, I might then, as an adult, go, look, I'm really sorry. I was feeling a bit scared. But I shouldn't have behaved like that in response to fear. I should have asked you just to pull over or something, right? So I can advocate for my child's perspective, knowing my child's perspective, without becoming the child. Mm. And we can have an adult-to-adult conversation, and that's probably quite healthy.
Yeah, definitely.
So this was a cross...
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Transaction where there was a parent-parent interaction. Now, sometimes it might be necessary to create deliberately a cross-transaction. Remember, cross-transaction just being a non-complementary transaction. So, say, for example, Corey, you and I have this dynamic between us where I'm always criticizing your clothes. So I'm always going, Corey, what's wrong with you? Why are you wearing those bloody awful clothes? You have no dress sense whatsoever. Bloody, this is all stuff I've wanted to get out for a while, Corey. You seriously messed up. You look so dreadful. And you're usually in the child going...
Sorry, why? It's really, what? I'm sorry.
I just can't dress myself. Can you help me pick out some clothes?
Maybe you can help me because I just can't do it myself.
But instead of doing that, you have suddenly, spontaneously recognized the toxic culture at SciGuys Pod, and you resist the urge to be a child, and you also resist the urge to be a parent and criticize me for being such a dick, and you switch to adult and go, Luke, can we just have a chat? I've noticed this thing that's going on.
Luke, can we just have a chat? Yeah. I've noticed this thing that's going on.
You're always putting me down.
You're always putting me down.
And I just want to, I want it to end because I want us to be productive.
And I want it to end because I want us to be productive.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. I think the last thing to do here quickly in this section is just to say, none of these states are wholly positive or wholly negative. The names suggest that they might be. Controlling parent sounds bad. Free child sounds good. But the reality is a controlling parent can be autocratic. A controlling parent can also be constructive, right? A nurturing parent can be soothing, but it can also be sort of overly
pandering. It could be sort of, yeah, like it could let you get away with too much, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you might prevent people from actually getting better at stuff themselves if you always kind of just do stuff
coddling
for
them. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. An adaptive child can be, for example, it can be compliant, it can follow rules, it can be really helpful, but it can also be fearful and scared of things that happen to it in childhood that actually aren't going to recreate themselves in adulthood. And a free child can be a little bit egocentric, a little bit off the rails, but it can also be creative, it can be curious, it can be like playful, right? So these are all positives and negatives to all these different types. Adult's just adult. It doesn't have subcategories. It's just adult.
Just adults.
The final thing I want to touch on quickly is just the idea of games. So we introduced this idea of games, right?
Ooh.
We're not playing a game. Oh. You don't want to play this game, trust me. So the book, Games
what?
We Play... well...
Come on.
They're psychological games we play on each other, right? So, like, seen through the lens of transactional analysis.
This is news to me, Luke. Have you been playing games with my psychology? Go on.
I told you about the toxic SciGuys culture. So this book originally was talking about these games that people play with each other. So we've already touched on Alteria, which is where you have essentially a conversation that seems like an adult-to-adult conversation, but has a little secret undertone that's a little bit potentially manipulative, and it's intended for either the adult or the child, sorry, the parent or the child state. So for example, I could go to you, say, Corey, we live together, and I think you kind of waste a lot of your time, and I go, Corey, what are you up to?
Hello.
And that just sounds like I have plausible deniability and go, I'm just wondering what you're up to. But secretly, it's a little message that's hidden in there to make you go, what am I doing? Oh, I'm wasting my time. Oh, yeah, why am I wasting my time? And that sort of triggers your parent, and then it sort of triggers your child as well, right? So that's an ulterior interaction where there's a secret coded message with the plausible deniability of seeming like an adult-to-adult interaction.
Almost like negging.
Almost like, exactly, right? Almost like negging, right? So... Then this whole book was basically about games, which is about these psychological games. That's like a very basic psychological game. But also there are psychological games people play in order to get emotional payoffs that they want to experience. So, for example, I come to you and I go, oh, Corey, I've got this problem. I've got this problem that I have. And you go... okay. Sorry, that was crap.
Go on.
Okay, so I come to you and I go... Are you not cutting this?
I'm not cutting that.
Corey, I've got a problem. I've got this problem and it's really difficult. I can't solve it. My dad keeps on stealing my car keys and driving my car around, right? And Corey might go, why don't you do this? Why don't you do this? Why don't you try this? Why don't you hide the keys? Why don't you talk to him? Why don't you... As if I haven't thought of all these possible solutions. But what then I do is I reject all of your solutions. And then I go, well, you're a lot of help. Thanks a lot, Corey. And then you go, sorry. Yeah. You might apologize and say, oh, I'm really sorry. Yeah. And what I really wanted out of that interaction was I didn't really want solutions. I wanted to
be consoled,
have attention, that kind of thing. But crucially, what's really interesting about this is that the games are not seen as zero-sum games in that I get what I want out of you. What they're seen as is that we both get a payoff that we both want. So in this situation, you might get to feel superior to me because you're generating lots of ideas that you think I've never thought of before.
I do that a lot, though, mate. So-
You're wondering why you get these comments on Sideguys. You have to text me about
Oh, yes, I make a joke with my friend on a comedy podcast. Suddenly I must be a sociopath.
So crucially, there's, you know, this is a whole book about these games, and some of them can be positive, some of them can be negative, but crucially they're all about how people play these psychological games on each other that aren't really about the conversation they're having. They might be that they want to feel superior over the other person. They might be that they want attention. Remember, it might be that they want to appear really wise. Those kind of things. It's all about these emotional payoffs that we want whilst pretending to play a game where I want ideas for my problem I've got. So that is transactional analysis. That is how my basic explanation of how this works. The final little plot twist I want to give you is that this is not actually just about interactions that happen externally. This is used...
What?
It's used to think about how your inner parent talks to your inner child. So if you've got a critical inner voice, if you've got a scared inner voice, if you've got a lot of guilt, it's also used in that way where these interactions can be happening inside your head. They might happen as a voice in your head, as multiple voices in your head. They might happen as feelings and interactions between feelings, ricocheting between guilt and fear and all these kind of things. So I'm not going to get into that because I think it's basically clear from everything above how that might play out. But it's not just external interactions. It's also about how you think internally about criticizing yourself, fearing things, those kind of things.
Yeah, it sounds like what you're talking about is just a model for people to look at themselves, their relationship with other people, and their relationship with themselves as well, actually. And it doesn't need to be a sort of this is strictly that sort of thing. Like, as in... The parent is strictly a voice in your head, like you're saying, it could be feelings and whatnot. And I think that's what's sort of good about pop psychology, if you use it in the right way, if you view it in the correct way, if you see it as just a model that helps you understand yourself maybe a little bit better. It doesn't need to be 100% correct, and you don't need to look at it as though this is absolutely applying to you in all situations. But where it is useful to you, you can use it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
If it's a helpful tool that you can use sometimes. You're not going to use a hammer for a screw unless you're, you know, wanting to do that. But couldn't find a reason why you would. You wouldn't use a hammer for a screw. But when you've got a nail, hammer's kind of useful, right?
Exactly. And as with any model, it's important to notice that what happens if you try to apply this to your life is that there'll be plenty of situations where you go, oh, was that the child mode? Was that the parent mode? I don't really know what that was. In which case you go, okay, this model doesn't apply, and you move on. Don't get obsessed with the model. It also might be that you don't really understand the model, in which case I'm not a psychologist, as I've said. But yeah, it's not applicable to all situations, but it can be helpful to start interrupting some negative reinforced patterns, either in your own mind or in interactions you have with other people.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's just one thing left to do. It's a quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 da. Baby little child edition.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are not the same as always. Luke will ask one question. That's one question only. The first person to answer between me and the audience wins. What do we win, Luke?
You win some sunblock for the tip of your peen. I'm being a nurturing parent.
Okay. What is the question?
My question is, what is the name for an interaction where it's an adult-to-adult interaction on the surface, but underneath there's a secret little message?
Ulterior!
Oh yeah, ding, 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 ding! Congratulations, you win a bit of sunblock for your little peen. Would you like me to apply it for you?
Once the cameras have stopped rolling, I think. Good Lord. Well, I think that's all from us, but before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit, and thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too! Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at Dotcore everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Bye.
We'll be right back.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.